Hello and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Between the Presets, a podcast by me, Rudy Stettner, that comes out every Monday evening. Here is the place where anything that can be said in polite company is fair game for discussion, even if it occasionally offends. Let's roll. Please be advised that this episode of Between the Presets contains material that may be unsuitable for younger audiences. If that is an issue, please listen at another time or on headphones. Thank you. Hello, it is Monday evening, the second day of the second Adar, 5784. That being on the English calendar, Monday, March 11th, 2024. This is a challenging time of year for me. No major crisis or anything of the sort, but I do not enjoy the spring clock change for daylight savings time. I lose an hour of sleep. My perception of time changes. I naturally get used to the slow progression of the time of sunset from setting earlier to setting later, and also the time of sunrise moving back by couple minutes, or maybe depending a minute every day, and all of a sudden this 1 hour change, I don't enjoy it. It seems unnecessary, and I wish they would just leave the clocks alone. I think Arizona does this. There is a proposal, I think, in Congress to just let the clocks be and not to fiddle with them twice a year. I wish they would do that. I can cope with jet lag. I can cope with traveling to another city and the time of sunset is a little or a lot later or earlier than where I live. But clock tinkering is extremely annoying. One thing I've been reading about occasionally in the past few weeks is the matter of electric cars. We were told that if we would get electric cars, that it would ease up on the use of gasoline, on the use of fossil fuels, and the earth would be a much nicer, cleaner place. So one of the things that our bright leaders overlooked in promoting this catastrophe is that electric cars are charged with electric chargers. Now, where does the electricity come from with which the cars are charged? It comes from fossil fuels. That could be coal, that could be oil, whatever is used locally. Second thing is, the batteries in electric cars don't last forever. They eventually lose their ability to hold a charge, and they have to be replaced. So how much is the battery for an electric car? It's huge. It's as big as a lot of car engines, and it can cost $20,000, $30,000 more. And it's made out of a lot of rare metals and materials that have to be dug out of the earth. Now, a lot of that digging for these rare minerals for making electric car batteries comes from strip mining, comes from ripping off the topsoil, ripping off the trees, and digging underneath, creating incredible environmental disruption. Now, all of these difficulties with electric cars were foreseeable. Unfortunately, what the environmentalists were doing and what the promoters of electric cars were doing was not researching a new Green Deal, new green cars, etc. They were promoting. Now, in promoting, you put forward the advantages that you see, and you downplay or suppress discussion of the disadvantages. So now it turns out that these huge number of electric cars that were manufactured are, nobody wants them. So we're back to the drawing board with the gas-powered cars, which were, in any case, or are in any case, a lot cleaner than cars were, say, 50 years ago. This is a variation on a theme that we had with the question of COVID vaccines, which were rushed into production. They bypassed a lot of the preliminary studies to come out with COVID vaccines, which turned out to have a lot of harmful side effects, which one during the height of the COVID epidemic, social media, medical journals were banning the discussion of the COVID vaccine. And it was banned, this discussion was banned with a hysterical refrain of follow the science. There's a very interesting difference between follow the science and follow science. Follow science means that there's a system of peer review, there's a system of testing hypotheses and coming up with viable theories and arriving at scientific conclusions that may be modified or scrapped according to later research. It's an ongoing process because science is not the total of what is. Science is the total of what we know about what is. And there is a big difference. On the other hand, the science means what is being politically promoted. The idea of global warming, the idea of gender being something we can choose, all these things are the science. I almost wonder if some of the old science textbooks might become contraband because the ideas expressed within them are considered to be heretical. Back in the time of Galileo, Galileo proposed that the Earth revolved around the Sun, which is, I guess, called heliocentric, rather than the other way around, that the Sun revolves around the Earth. And Galileo ran afoul of the Catholic Church at that time, which made him recant his heliocentric vision of the solar system. Bertolt Brecht did a play called Galileo, which dramatizes this very nicely. But when I look at what we are doing today with science, turning it into the science, strong-arming and silencing scientists who go away from the politically sanctioned mainstream. It's almost like we have a new theocracy, except it's kind of like an atheist theocracy, from which one is forbidden to deviate. This is not the first time that economic planners have come up with ideas that turned out to be disasters. Back in 1959, China had the Great Leap Forward. Under Chairman Mao, they planned to turn China into an industrialized nation. They were going to produce their own steel. They were going to do all the things that an industrialized country needs to compete on the international stage. It even got to the point where people were taking their pots and pans and bringing them to collection centers where they were melted down so that they could produce, I guess, steel or whatever the pots were made out of, pots and pans were made out of. They came up with fraudulent statistics as to how well the Great Leap Forward was working. And the Great Leap Forward, because it diverted a lot of workers from agriculture into their attempt at industry, that it produced a famine with a very high body count. There is one item in the news that's absolutely chilling. There was some kind of award ceremony for firemen who got promotions, and the presenter at this award ceremony was Letitia James. Now, this is the woman who has presided over the prosecution of President Trump, who invented financial crimes, for which she fined him close to $500 million with all the interest that is daily accruing. And the firemen, surprise, surprise, weren't so happy to have Letitia James. And Letitia James was booed loudly. She was interrupted frequently with chants of Trump, Trump, Trump. So then now the fire department of New York is telling the firemen in a really ominous, threatening way that they should turn themselves in for less consequences, because video footage of the award ceremony is being reviewed to determine who was responsible for the gross display of disrespect. Now, they should have known that Letitia James was a very controversial person. They could have chosen an actor, a famous entertainment personality. They could have chosen anyone at all, but they chose somebody who's widely disliked by many people. And what's more important, there is the matter of free speech. Free speech can be inconvenient. It can be rude. It can be offensive. But far more offensive than free speech is the attempt to suppress it. And the public outcry against this terrible misuse of authority by the Fire Department of New York against its own firemen is creating a backlash in the court of public opinion, as well it should. The idea of freedom of thought, freedom of speech, freedom of worship, these are deeply ingrained in the American psyche. And these ideas are under attack as never before. I think one of the things that really concerns me in this presidential election year is the weaponization of social media. Ideally, Facebook, Instagram, all these different platforms should be a conduit for information. The only things that should be censored and suppressed are calls to violence, and that would include announcing where someone lives, where their kids go to school, etc. But I think we as a people really need to examine how the rights that were listed in the Bill of Rights, rights given us by our Creator, how these rights and responsibilities exist in the context of modern technology, modern, you know, the internet and all of these wonderful new inventions we have. Ideally, the free flow of ideas, facts, and information and opinions should be a disinfectant for erroneous and harmful ideas. But we need to let that happen, and we need to make that happen. In the meantime, I'm very grateful that my siblings and I, although we think quite differently on a number of issues, have agreed not to let our political differences interfere with our personal relationships, that our fraternal devotion to each other, our devotion to family, is not divided by considerations of politics. I am also grateful that my wife's family comes to this manner of functioning very naturally. And I think it's not only good for families and for individuals, it's good for the country as well. When I was living in Italy many years ago, I had on the one hand a classmate whose father was an enthusiastic fan of Benito Mussolini. He voted for what was then the equivalent of the fascist party. It was Movimento Sociale Italiano, the Italian social movement. And I had a barber who proudly stated that his two political idols, if you will, the two people he admired most politically, were Pope John the 23rd and Nikita Khrushchev. He considered himself both a Catholic and a communist. My father managed a factory which had a union, and I think by law, at the time at least, any Italian company with more than a certain number of employees had to have a union. And the union at that time, the biggest labor union, was controlled by the Communist Party. And he enjoyed having discussions with union officials Some of the discussions centered on political matters, and others were sports, music, generally apolitical topics. My father was very anti-communist. He thought it was a destructive and toxic ideology, but he did maintain friendships with people whose views were almost entirely opposite his. I think the one motto he had was, "Shut up and listen. You will become more knowledgeable from listening to people than from preaching at them." And I think this would be a valuable lesson in universities today, for people to view not only their professors, but their classmates as a possible wellspring of information and perspectives. So I wish all of you, my dear listeners, a good and blessed rest of your week. And it has yet again been a pleasure sharing these thoughts with you. This wraps up another weekly episode of Between the Presets. I thank you all for the pleasure of sharing with me my weekly muse. Whatever platform you access, hitting like, subscribe, or leaving a comment is much appreciated. My email address is thewinterriders@gmail.com. thewinterriders@gmail.com. Until next week, adio, which in some African languages means born on Monday or be righteous, and closely resembles adios in Spanish.